afternoon, sir. What's your name?
Mario Velasco.
Okay, so Ms. Rittenhouse is going to be conducting a hearing. That's going to be the next voice that you hear, okay?
Okay, can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Is there a volume here that turned it up a little? Can there's something on the handle. Is that volume?
I have no idea.
Oh.
Check with your CO3. Can you hear us?
Okay, there it is. It's up all the way. Thank you.
All right, okay.
Okay, Mr. Velasco?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you please start by stating your full name and your ABC number for the record?
Mario David DiCarlo Velasco.
And your ABC?
090511.
090511. Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. And this is for a parole hearing, general parole, which is 412A. Or home arrest or absolute discharge today. Those are the three things you're being heard for. And you will become eligible for these, it looks like, on June 28th of 2019. So I'd like to introduce you to the board. If you look to your right, all the way down at that end, is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Right next to him is the Honorable David Neal. And over on my other side here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. My name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today.
Did you say honorable as in judges?
We are not judges. We are just members of the public. We're appointed by the governor. So
okay, all
right. Okay?
I was just trying to get... Okay, okay.
That's fine. That's fine. No, we want you to know who you're dealing with here. Okay. I'd like to just start your hearing with a kind of a summary of the particulars around your case, but I'll ask you periodically if I have it right, as far as you know. So we'll start by just saying you're 48 years old now?
Just turned
48, okay. And you're serving 28 years for the crime of murder in the first degree, and it looks like you've got concurrent aggravated assault for 20 years, another concurrent aggravated assault for 20 years, and a concurrent burglary for 21 years. Your sentence was a little complicated.
If I can interject.
No, please, please.
My victim was in the hospital for 4 days. It's an attempted first-degree murder.
Okay, let me look. Let me look here. Yes, it is. That's my mistake. My mistake. I'm gonna make a note of you. That got your heart going a little bit.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Okay. All right, but you also, it looks like you have some expired sentences. There's a burglary second degree for 10 years and a kidnapping for 14 years. Those are expired. And then you also have an aggravated assault, which was 15 years. And on that one, it looks like you were paroled to this sentence, the one you're serving now.
Yeah,
okay.
I had two. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I had two CR numbers with the same victim. I was sentenced to serve 15 years, two-thirds, with a smart time. For the CR numbers 733, and after serving two-thirds of that, I went to parole board twice and received absolute discharge, which is a 4.5-year time cut for good behavior on that charge. But they paroled me to begin the 28-year sentence, which is also a two-thirds, of which to be served under 13604.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one is the attempted murder with the four aggravated assaults and then the burglary. So that's what, absolutely.
Yes, and this is 963, CR 963, this one that you're on now. So this is the one that occurred in August 26, 1990?
Yes.
Is the date of that offense in 963. Okay, how old were you, sir, when the crime occurred? How old were you?
If I remember correctly, I was about 19 going on 20 or 20.
Okay, around 20.
I was about to turn 20 because I was born in 1970.
Yep, okay,
around. These crimes are about 3 weeks apart with the same victim.
Right, right. One July 31st.
And physically been released.
Yeah, okay. So you were 19.
Am I speaking loud enough?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
And it looks like you were convicted in a jury trial, and that was on February 25th of 92, and then sentenced on March 25th, 92, about? Okay.
I think you have it right.
Okay. And did you ever appeal your conviction?
You know what? I put in two A general appeal, a direct appeal, I think is what they refer to it as. And I think there may be two post-conviction reliefs, but the only semblance of any type of relief that I would have, that I almost received was, am I speaking loud enough?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
We hear you.
They used the Hannah priors to enhance my sentencing. I don't know if you remember Governor Fife Simonton.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, so within that, I went to the phase two, and I didn't get recommended. Two of the members decided they just didn't want to, but they acknowledged that Hannah priors was used to enhance my sentencing. And so within that, Diane Belcher, she was the head of the clemency.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was Dwayne Belcher. It was a man, Dwayne Belcher.
No. This one, I could show you the document if you. Her name was Diane.
No, it was a Dwayne Belcher. If it's Belcher, it was a man. I know him, and he was the chair. It's a man.
The lady I'm talking about is an African-American woman, and there was two other members. It was a pre-panel, and they told me that they also, that they were the board members for the parole board, so they were working in both capacities.
Okay.
So within that, they didn't recommend me, and can I show you this? Can you see this paper?
Is this a commutation, a request for commutation, sir?
It was under the Senate Bill 1250. Remember that when they had truth in sentencing, the Senate Bill 1250?
Yes.
Okay,
but people can apply for commutation of their sentence, and what that does, either this board will do an initial review and then pass that or not pass it to the governor. And it would be the governor that would grant that, not this board.
Okay. I spoke with an individual named Leroy Guzman.
Okay, don't know that. Oh, Leo V. Guzman. Yeah, I know Leo. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
And he told me that, he said, the lady that I'm making reference to, he said he's now in her position. And he said that she erroneously, which I asked him, I didn't want to view it that way, but he said that because of 13604K, I have to serve two-thirds of it before I can be certified. He sent me a letter saying, I see that you've already been certified in advance. What she did was, back then, she went on ahead and she said, I believe they'll honor my 30 years of service. That's how she put it. And the board that was with her, her colleagues were saying, well, we really can't do this. And she went on ahead and put it in there anyway, but he said that it would be reviewed and that he would hold on to her recommendation for me. Is that still in file?
No, sir. That actually would have no bearing on today's matter, so I think we should just...
Something totally different?
Yeah, I think we should just move on ahead and...
Oh, okay, sure.
That's totally...
I guess I got confused.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Today is a separate plural hearing, and we just consider the board members who are here today will consider all the different aspects of your case, what's happened, your behavior since then, and et cetera. So let me just continue here. It looks like
this is regular parole.
This is for regular parole.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm here.
Okay, good. We'll just continue. It looks like you have somewhat of a discipline history, not very. You have four majors, it looks like, in your history, which is pretty good considering the amount of time that you've been there. But it looks like you've had a couple majors within the last. You've had two majors in the last 2 years. One of them in October of 17, and that was for harassment, and that's a major. And then in October of 18, there's a threatening discipline, and that's also a major. So can you remember what those were about? What happened?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, tell us what happened.
The B7 ticket, do you want me to go...
Tell us what happened, yeah.
First step, or just... There was an officer, I think it female officer that I knew from Mojave. I lost that Mojave for 9 years, from 2007 to 2016.
Okay.
But then, normally with DOC, once you've been on the yard for 4 to 5 years due to familiarity and to so as to prevent fraternization, they tend to transfer you.
They will.
But if you don't get any,
Go ahead.
If you don't get in any trouble, you know, you don't want to remove individual inmates that are not causing a ruckus, so to speak. So they kept me there for 9 years. And so within that, I used to speak to all the staff there. I got real familiar with the staff there every day. And so within that, when I transferred to Mena custody, which was Gila, after being at Mojave for 9 years, there was a day I was at working at ACI. And on our, we worked Monday through Thursday. And so on that day of in question, they found me guilty of first they charged me with initial charge was stalking. And then she downward modified when I told her, I said, look, she works in the morning time. It was a female staff room. She works in the morning time. And I'm at ACI Monday through Thursday from at least 6:30 till 5:30 in the afternoon. I'm not even here for her shift. So when CO3 Zapata acknowledged that, they downward modified that to a B7 harassment of staff. That ticket is involving, I went to her and expressed to her that her name, her first name, was being utilized by prisoners on the yard, and that she might be concerned about that. And she didn't recall, she asked me to prove that this, she asked me to say her name. I spelled out 3 out of 4 letters. And within that, she was uncomfortable with me knowing her first name. And because of her being uncomfortable with me knowing her first name, they construed that as harassment, and they transferred me from there to Fort Grant. That's the ticket in a nutshell.
Okay, and what was the one in 2018 for threatening?
The 39D. I'm at level 3 right now at a very hostile yard. I'm really uncomfortable. The I was at Fort Grant, and there was an evening where they had at least, I'd say, 15 to 18 new trainees that had been training. They had them doing everything from looking in trees to tapping our bunks while we're sleeping, flashing lights in windows. So we began to watch them. They were doing things that we normally don't see them do. Between the inmate populace, just as officers tend to watch how we get through our day, whether we are playing dominoes or chess or just reading a book, we tend to watch what they do too, especially when they're training. It's just human nature to be curious. So within that, there was one of the smallest, most, she had to be at least 90 pounds. The smallest person in the group, me and a couple of guys, we began, and I didn't wager, but there was no money exchange, but we pretty much were making our opinion on who would pass and who wouldn't pass, who would flunk out. That, I mean, just not to be rude, but so within that, I pretty much said I didn't think she was going to make it because the radio that she carried was bigger than she was. And we'll see, like I said, as a joke, but I wasn't trying to be cruel or nothing. And so within that, when she passed her training that night that she did count, I said, hey, long time no see. And she said, hey, how's it going? I said, I see that you made it. I said, but for a minute, I didn't think you were going to make it. I said, you know, we were kind of like, many people were thinking you weren't going to make it. So I said, congratulations on that. She said, oh, thank you. That's very nice of you. I said, yeah. I said, I noticed that some of the staff that was in your group, which is a huge group, I haven't seen them since. Are you guys that are here, Graham, or, you know, around the mountain, which is Graham? And she said, oh, no, some of us are on day shift, some are on night shift, and some of them are transferred around to Graham. I think she said 9 members were transferred to Graham. I said, okay, well, congrats again. And then she said, oh, thank you. And then she left. She did her count, and then she moved. She left the house that I was in, because at Fort Grant, we have, it's a renovated Army base. There's homes. So within all that, a sergeant comes in maybe half an hour later, and I'm watching a movie, drinking coffee, and he flags me down, calls me out of the building, and he says, what is this I hear about you asking about my staff? And I'm like, I was non-responsive. He asked me 5 times. I'm sitting back in my mind trying to mentally go over who I had talked to the whole day. And I drew a blank. So I was non-responsive. So after about the 5th time, it clicked in. He goes, one of my staff members came over and told me that you were asking about a particular female staff member. And I said, wait a minute. I said, Sarge, could you stop yelling at me? I said, for one, I said, I need you to please just dial it back a notch or two because I haven't done anything. And and it's cold out here. I just got out of the shower. I have asthma. And so what is this about? So within all that, he goes, look, this is what you're going to do. He says, I don't want you to address her. I don't want you to acknowledge her. I don't want you to. And I won't lie. I interjected right there. I said, listen, I personally haven't done anything about anything wrong. I haven't done anything in regards to what you're saying. I said, he goes, look, I can have you move to a sex offender yard just like that. And he snapped his finger. And I said, wait a minute, you're talking about a predator. First, you're asking me what I did. Now, when I go to try to explain what happened, you're interrupting me, speaking for me. Do you want to hear what happened or not? I said, but as far as going to a SO yard, I said, that's a predator packet. I said, you have to merit that. And then someone I told him, I said, look, I've been in prison for, I lost my freedom 28 and a half years ago. And I basically told him, I said, so as far as like trying to, you know, to instill fear of being on a yard, I said, I'm a little too seasoned for that. I said, truth be told, I haven't done anything wrong. Why are we even having this conversation? I said, and you're hostile. I said, you're supposed to be defusing me, but I find myself the roles are reversed. So within that, he goes, oh, is that right? I said, yeah. I said, policy. I said, I've been dealing with policy since 92. I said, you're a sergeant. I acknowledge that, but you're probably not even 30 yet. I said, not to, no offense, but come on, man. We refer ourselves as convicted felons, which is a difference. To us, it's different than just rookie prisoners. I said, he goes, look, this is what, he goes, is that right? I said, yeah. So within that, he goes, you know what? He goes, I said, look, if what you could do, I said, you could initiate an investigation if that's what you want. I said, but for me, giving a congratulatory word, that's not going to merit me being on some episode. And so within all that, he went ahead to say, okay, is that right? Is that right? He took offense. He said, cuff up. And I said, for what? He goes, cuff up. He said it five times. And so after that, I asked him again, for what? He goes, I'm taking you to the MDU. I said, which is the SDU, MDU, CDU. It's a detention. So within that, I said, okay, if you're going to take me there, I'm asthmatic. Let me go grab my inhaler and my jacket. He goes, no, you're cuffing up right now. I said, look, I got asthma. It's raining. I'm fresh out of the shower. I don't want to get pneumonia. I said, look, I've been in a minute. I don't know if you're going to put me in a cage outside and let the weather deal with me, just have some retaliation or something because you're upset. I said, I think you're blowing this thing up, but I'm definitely not going to leave without my jail. I need to get this. I said, you can get it for me or I'm going to go get it just really quick. And he's like, so when I went to go reach for the door, he was about 7 feet away from me towards my left. The entrance to the house is towards my right. So when I went to reach for the door, he went to reach for his spray to spray the back of my head. So I heard the Velcro rip and I turned around and I said, really? Really? I said, you're going to spray the back of my head for what? I said, and he couldn't get it out. And so then I said, see, the wardrobe malfunction that you're having right now is a sign that you're really not, there's no need to spray me. I said, let me just go get my medicine. I'm an asthmatic. I said, I don't want to get sick. So within, I said, I'm going to go with you. And so he's like, no, you cuff up now. He went to yell even further. I said, look, we got rules like 10 to 10 as far as noise in here. I said, I need you to really bring it down and not, you're going to get in trouble with the other prisoners for waking them up. We got firefighters in there that I live with. So I went on ahead in the house anyway and grabbed my inhaler. I locked my locker. I turned the TV off and put the jacket on. I came out. By that, as soon as I reached for the door to turn it to go inside, he initiated an ICS and called for backup. I came out immediately. It took me about 20 seconds. I turned around. I showed him the inhaler. I said, look, here's my jacket. Here's my inhaler. I turned around. I assumed the position. I walked backwards toward him to show no threat. I said, you can cuff me up now. If you got, I got what I needed, let's go and I'll go for the ride. So within that, I asked him that about five times, and then it wasn't until I made reference that I said, hey, the rookies that you're talking about, the trainees, they're watching you right now. I said, look, you dropped the ball on everything else. I said, here's the last chance to save face on some note. So, and within some semblance. And so when I said that to him, he looked over, saw them looking, and then he cuffed me up. He walked me over, and they put me in the CDU. I spoke to one captain of the unit, but because of a conflict of interest, he couldn't be the DHO of the case. So the other captain from around the mountain, Captain McClain, came in, and I knew the DW because I worked for DW.
Okay, Mr. Velasco, we got the picture. But I do have this question for you. You seem like a smart guy. How is it that you could go from 1993? All this time, and then within 1 year, get two majors. How How did that happen, especially knowing that we're going to come before the board? How could that happen?
And that is the same exact question that I asked. I petitioned this all the way to Charles Wyandak, the director. And I mentioned it to him. I said, excuse my French, but the way I put it was, I didn't just take a stupid pill after doing all this positive programming and do that. I'm about to go to the board and with potential release. There's no reason for me to be bitter. I didn't do anything.
Okay.
All I did was and when I mentioned that to him, the DW on the unit, she upheld the findings. And prior to this, I don't know if they mentioned it to you, but I had just taken the automotive 101, and I was assigned to go around the mountain to Graham, which is a totally separate unit, to go do the 103, which is the hands-on aspect of automotive 101, the 103. So on the 22nd, the clerk and the teacher's aide was about to leave, and according to Mr. Adams, he was going to have me transferred around there because anyone that takes the class, the 103, to do the hands-on portion, you have to go around there. So I was in route there. I mentioned that there's no way I'm trying to establish some relationship with an officer there, and I'm about to transfer out. And being that I'm about to come before the board, there's no, which I thought was May 19, because that's been the normal date of when all my time comps say May 19, but like I told him, I said, there's no way all of a sudden I just lost control. I didn't do what he's saying. I didn't ball my fist.
Okay.
I never even rose my voice. I was emphatic with the way I spoke to him.
Okay.
I never was within 7 feet of him. I didn't do any of
that. Okay, Mr. Velasco.
I figured they were going to dismiss it, to be honest, but...
No, it's still on the record. Okay, so let's just switch and talk a little bit about your programming. It looks like you've done Design for Living, Cultural Diversity, Conflict Resolution, Substance Abuse Education, Domestic Violence, Thinking for Change, and then some trades, custodial, auto tech that you just mentioned, electronics, and there are a whole bunch of others. It sounds like you've done a lot of programming while you're in.
Everything they have to offer except for reentry, only because I wasn't within 6 months.
Right.
Of the day,
yeah, and they want to put the people who could benefit most, like they're likely to be released. So you have a written release plan, I understand, and that you plan would still be to go live with your mother in Texas if you're paroled, or?
That's the address that I have, and I brought that with me, but I think everything's on there. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
One of the things that I'd like to do, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I went and stayed in Banner University Hospital in Tucson last year for a day and a half.
Uh-huh.
So I had a catheter, and it was a scare as far as like having a blood clot, but I didn't have a clot. But I became aware of a physician referred to as a primary care technician. It's a 7-week course, and then you're in scrubs working with nurses and doctors. I've always had an interest in paramedicine. Since my crime, I've had an interest in. I realize what side of the coin I believe by nature I'm supposed to be on. It's not someone who goes around harming people. I'd rather be of help to people. So within that, my endeavor is to go and work in the hospital and
okay.
the medical field.
So
it's a 7-week course.
Do you have relatives in Arizona at all? Or no family in Arizona?
Absolutely. After my mother did 20 years in the Air Force, she was the only relative. The only groups
okay.
that I had here, we're from California, but
okay.
she's went on ahead and moved to Texas. The home that she lives in, I'm the sole benefactor of all these things, and I'm supposed to take care of last rites. Not that I'm trying to rush her or anything, but
okay.
that's where my lifeline, so to speak, is. That's
okay.
where my support is. The home, the vehicle, those things are afforded to me there.
Okay.
So,
well, I'll just tell you, Mr. Velasco, that that might be a little complicating factor because, of course, you have to be released on parole, then apply for interstate compact because the state of Texas would supervise you on behalf of Arizona, but you would still be an Arizona parolee. So there's an additional step to take in there. So you would need to parole somewhere in Arizona, which might include a halfway house or something like that.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I didn't know what absolute discharge was. The goal that I had been trying to achieve all this time has been to hopefully receive absolute discharge for a second time. But I was informed that when the way they explained it to me, the members of the board, the panel that I was in front of that granted it for my first year. No.
Okay. sorry, sir. Sometimes we get phone calls on the phone that's here in the room. Okay.
Well, that's fine.
As you were saying.
I'm still amazed by the monitor and all the computer aspects of things. This is kind of interesting. If I was to receive absolute discharge, wouldn't that mean I was just free to go on with my life?
Absolute discharge, sir, is means your any obligation to the criminal justice system is gone. It is ended. And it's just one of those things that automatically shows up that you're eligible for, and it would be up to this board to consider that. So, but you're also eligible for parole, general parole, or home arrest, which is a very closely monitored with an ankle monitor, and a situation where you live and you have a weekly itinerary, you're still on inmate status when you're in home arrest. You live out in the community, but you work very closely with a parole officer, especially people who've been in prison as long as you have been. So, because you have to gradually get used to being out in the outside world.
That's one thing I wanted to ask this committee. Okay.
Be brief there, Mr. Rasko.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was hoping that, because of the level of optimism that I have, how much leadering do prisoners really need to learn from your past mistakes and to strive towards being gainfully employed, accepting full responsibilities as far as being an adult within the workforce, trying to seek out since Arizona goes beyond education for expungement, how much leadering do we really need? Because I was really like hoping to not have to be around prisoners anymore. The halfway house aspect, from what I gather, is it's like a chaperone that meters reentry. And so within that, I was really hoping to go ahead and be able to go back to school and be amongst my family in a totally different state where I can move.
Understood, but there are legal impediments to that at this point. I mean, you would need to have an interstate compact to be able to do that. So, Mr. Velasco, we've talked quite a lot, and I would like to hear you tell us what happened the day of the crime. What happened? These two crimes, really.
Okay.
What was going on in your life? Why did this happen?
Okay. Back in 1990, I had a live-in relationship with a girlfriend that I was engaged to named Connie Walker. My case was of a domestic nature. Within that, because I know they were pressed for time, I'll try to be as direct and give you a less scenic route if I can.
Okay.
Not to detract away from the gravity of what I did. I didn't have a record prior to any of this. So within being in Arizona. So within that, I became obsessed, in my opinion, with my fiance and with the child that we had planned to have. The first time I got her pregnant, it was an accident, and she had a miscarriage. And now none of this, what I'm mentioning now, is going to be on file here in this way because I didn't testify in court. It's just a one-sided ordeal. Not that I'm trying to say I'm innocent of everything. No, I did some wrong. I admit that. So when she lost the first child, she became suicidal. To my opinion, I nursed her through that without prior training. And I just wasn't, I got it over my head. My mother had stressed to me, look, you dodged a bullet, you're not really ready. I had two NFL trainers, James Newton and David Epps, when I came out here. My endeavor was to play football and to be the next big thing. And so within the football world, and James was playing for the Cardinals, he was a defensive back for Dallas.
Okay, but let's get back to your offense, okay?
So within that, that's why I came out to Arizona. As far as the crime, my ex-fiance, Connie Warford, she couldn't, she didn't want to wait that long for me to be able to become successful in that particular career field. She decided she wanted to go into the service. By this time, I had already, we had a disagreement about abortion. I didn't believe in abortion. I don't believe in abortion unless it could cost you your life, or you've been violated by way of rape or something. I kind of believe that it's not the child's fault, so I was pro-life back then.
So, sir, let me, Mr. Velasco, let me read you something here. The couple argued again. The defendant, that would be you, punched a hole in the wall. Your girlfriend walked to the bedroom, hoping you would leave. Instead, you followed her into the bedroom, pushed her backward on the bed, and jabbed her 5 to 7 times in the abdomen, saying you would kill the baby, no one else. Now, I don't understand. If you're saying you don't believe in abortion, what was that?
This is her testimony as to what she told the court.
Then please tell us what happened. Right there, what happened?
My testimony is when she called me from MEPS because she failed the physical due to the pregnancy, but she passed with 90s on her ASVAB, and she wanted to go into the service. She told me that on the phone, I was at my mother's house, that if I didn't allow her to abort the child and didn't agree to it and pay half of it, that she would do it herself. She said, I'll just kill myself. She slammed the phone down. In a panic, I went up to the apartment. I have a key to that apartment. And in my mind at that time, the lease was supposed to be in both of our names, and I'm paying half the rent for providing all the food. So within that, I knock on the door. I hear a big boom of thud like someone had fell over. I use my shoulder rather than the key because I panic, and I knock the door in. Within that, she was pale on the floor, and it looked like she wasn't getting any air. So I went over to her to see if she was okay. She began to punch herself in her stomach in front of me. So within that, I restrained her 3 successive times and asked her to calm down, we'll work it out. And each time I would let her go, she would attack me and then herself. And so finally, after the 3rd time, I got on the phone, I called my mom and said, hey, look, I don't know what to do. I explained everything. She said, just get out of there. You're way over your head, get out of there. So within that, that's the way that happened. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. It just is night and day difference, sir, from what is in the official report.
And so within that, I've never really, because I made the big mistake of not testifying, but I should have went up. So I went on ahead and said, hey, look, it's not the child's fault. I'm the only one right now that's actually in support of having it. Once you have the baby child or custody to me, my mother said she'll agree to help us until such as the time as I can take care of it myself, as far as financial aspect, because I'm in over my head. I'm still in college. She was like, no, if you don't let me abort the child, I'll just kill it myself. So that night, the reason why I spent the whole night there wasn't to torment and torture. It was because she had me fully convinced that she was going to kill herself. And so within all that, I paid for the phone and let my mother talk to her. My mother spoke with her on the phone. She was non-responsive. And I went into the restroom to use the restroom. I'm talking about them sitting down on the toilet. So at that time, there was plenty of opportunities for her to be able to leave. We stayed there that whole night. The whole night she kept saying that she was cold, like cold shivers. And then she was burning hot, sweating. So I kept turning the air on and off. The prosecutor in the trial, he conveyed a message that I was trying to torture her by way of hot and cold. And that wasn't even remotely close to what had happened on that evening. We did get into it because I did choke her after the 3rd time of me actually restraining her, I snapped. I'm a lot. I snapped. And I began to choke her. And it wasn't until I seen saliva come out from her nostrils that I realized that I was choking her. It was too much in her air. And so within that, that's when I snapped out of it. I tried to get a body there. She jumped up, grabbed my leg, and I was taking 1 foot and like stepping like in the snow, trying to get to the door. She's wrapped around a bear hug around my other thigh, and she wouldn't let me leave. She said,
okay,
she's going to kill me. She,
Mr. Velasco, let me ask you about the second offense in August, a few weeks later. It says you were dressed entirely in black and wearing gloves. You kicked open her door and entered her bedroom, ripped the phone from the wall, and produced a razor blade and slashed her across her left cheek while she lay in bed. That's part of the official record. There's more, but I'd like you to tell me what happened that day.
Okay, that's a more serious account, in my opinion.
Well, what happened?
The razor blade only has my blood on it. The A, B, O, DNA test, which I have it right here, I brought it in with me, where the forensics, they did the forensics on it, only has my blood on it. I used a knife. I went in there. I did go in there. We did argue. I did cut her. I mean, there's no, that's an account. The only thing is they gave me 20 years.
Why did you cut it?
That account happened. That account happened is what I'm getting at. I didn't use that blade. I cut myself with that blade. I did brandish it, and I cut myself. That's why my blood is on it. It snapped in half, and I did hit the ground. I did use a knife. I had one knife, but they have three knives that they had at the trial. And my blood is on one knife, her blood is on, and my blood is on the knife that I actually used. I did cut her, and at that time, I was in a, it was a situation where I felt like obsessed in the sense of, if I can't have you, I didn't really want anyone else.
Mr. Velasco, there's a statement here.
That was very good.
Mr. Velasco. The statement at the end of this summary says the victim was transported to an ER where doctors determined she had lost one-third to one-half of her blood volume. How did that happen?
That happened because, like I'm admitting, I actually cut her on that, on the second CR number, the one we're speaking on right now. That happened. That happened with a knife.
All right, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Anyone have a question?
Okay.
Did you, Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Johnson has a question, Mr. Velasco.
So, Mr. Velasco, I'm trying to understand because you're making it sound like it's just a real simple situation, but, you know, over a matter...
I'm not sure for that.
Because it looks like on July 31st is when this thing first happened and she called you and told you that she was pregnant. And that she wanted to have an abortion, and you became upset. You went over, and that's when you physically assaulted her. You grabbed her, you choked her. You actually choked her unconscious till she passed out. And you continued to stay over there and do that till she convinced you she wasn't going to call the police. And then when she convinced you she wasn't going to call the police, she took and dropped you off at work. And then you were arrested the following day on August 1st. For aggravated assault, first-degree burglary, and then you were released. Is that right? You were released on August 2nd, and then on August 2nd, right after you were released, you telephoned two of the victim's friends asking about where the victim was, and then because you were trying to contact the victim, on the next day, August 3rd, you were rearrested for violation of a court order and held on bond, and then on August 10th, you were again released and held on a $500,000 bond. And then on August 26th, that's when you dressed entirely in black and gloves, picked open the victim's door. You entered with a razor blade, slashed her, cut her across the left cheek. You actually, it appears you tried to kill her. And then you left and the police were called. And she told the police, well, she escaped. And she notified the police and told them where you lived at. They went to your house and you wasn't home. And they found you at the emergency room where you had been transported to the emergency room by your mom for trying to commit suicide. So, I mean, this is like you had several chances to not get involved with the victim, but you just repeatedly went over and assaulted the victim. Is that right?
I turned myself in to Davis Moffitt Hospital. I had injuries.
Well, you didn't turn yourself in, sir.
The police came up because I admitted to the actual military staff that I had committed a crime, and I asked them. So they said there was a formality for us to call Tucson PD. I said, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. At that time, I could have actually left, but I didn't.
Okay.
And my mother was there with me.
Okay, let me go back to something else, sir. You said that you received an absolute discharge. When did you receive an absolute discharge?
I'll show you the paper.
Okay, well, I don't show any paperwork saying you received an absolute discharge. I do show you.
Can you see it on the screen? If I hold it up to the screen,
you'll be able to see. Did you see, just tell me the date, was it in 2000?
It says right here on this paper here. You see this?
No.
And here's the official two documents right here. Can you see them?
No.
Can I hold, Hold them closer.
Let me just read them, sir.
Just read them.
So when did it say you received the absolute discharge? What's the date on it, sir?
This one here, it says Florence South, South Unit. It says 31-411, absolute discharge, in accordance with ARS 31-411 or 31-412. The date is 1-14-2000.
Okay. So let me. I don't have those documents. Maybe
it was 4.5 years for good behavior that they cut my time to begin the second CR number.
Okay. So let me make something clear to you, sir. You did not receive an absolute discharge. Okay. Sir, listen to me.
What this paper says, this clemency paper right here, I'm showing it to you. It says it right here.
Well, I'm telling you, the records that we have does not.
I wouldn't argue with them. I'm just showing you the paper that I have.
Well, you didn't receive an absolute discharge. You were paroled to your next consecutive sentence. That's what you got. You didn't get a 411. You got a 412B.
They checked the wrong box.
Yeah. So I'm telling you that you didn't get an absolute discharge. You were just paroled to your next consecutive sentence. And the other thing is that. On the citation that you received in 18, you actually were at, you know, three different facilities where the female correction officers felt uncomfortable with you approaching them. You were at Mojave, in Gila, where you did Officer Rivera, a CO2 officer.
I knew her first name.
Okay.
And you were
inquiring about it, and you walked up and called her in an inappropriate way, so they didn't throw you.
No, I never even said her name.
Okay.
If I can explain this, you already did to me, Mr. Velasco.
You already explained it, but you didn't. I don't think you're being honest, and I think that you're telling us a different story, and you weren't honest about what occurred. You didn't tell us about you being arrested, a court order, you violating the court order, and going back over there repeatedly to have contact with her before you committed the ultimate crime. And you also didn't tell us that you were in the hospital because you tried to commit suicide, because you probably thought you killed her.
I was arrested at the house. That was where they arrested me at. That wasn't behind me trying to commit suicide. I'm not suicidal. I went through a whole back. I was a suicide prevention aide at Eastman in 2003.
Well, Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Just a very quick question, Mr. Velasco. What happened to the baby?
From what I understand, and it's been a long. To the other board member, I apologize if I offended you. I'm not trying to offend you. It's been 28 years. My recollection may not be crystal clear. I do acknowledge that I've done wrong on attempted murder and 4 aggravated assaults, as well as the baby situation. From what I'm understanding, is due to the surgery that and the anesthesia that the victim suffered. Had to be administered that the child was lost.
Okay. Thank you. It's not accounted for very clearly in the pre-sentencing report. And I do think it's important to understand. Thank you, Mr. Velasco. No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Miller, questions?
If they checked the wrong box on my parole paper, I wouldn't know that.
Mr. Velasco?
Yes, ma'am.
If you believe something has been checked wrong, which is possible, then you need to check that with your CO3, not with this board. So, Mr. Velasco, we're coming up to the end of your hearing, and I will give you an opportunity to make a final statement, but I will ask you not to repeat something you've already told us. You've been very detailed with your responses. So we don't want to hear something that we've already heard. If there's anything else that you haven't told us that you believe the board should consider, then you may say that now.
I acknowledge guilt in both CR numbers. My memory may not be crystal clear. I don't seek to deny that I deserve to serve the time that I served. If I've misconstrued or misspoken, you have my apology for that. But it's been almost 30 years. And so I'm older now, and my memory's not as crystal clear. This is not something that I speak about every day because I'm ashamed of what I've done. I'm not, at least in my opinion, I'm not hostile. I'm ready to, hopefully, my only anxiety that I have about being released is my mom's 70 years old, and I'm going to be her primary caretaker. I'd like to be able to honor my mother before she passes away. Outside of that, that's the only real family. I have a couple of brothers and stuff, but they're grown already. And the world that I knew is gone already. The people that I meet, they're like on a different frequency. It's kind of, we use a term called, kind of old-fashioned or old-school. So the world I knew is over. I took computer information, basic computer information systems, and I certified in it to be computer literate to some extent, because the world that you all live in now, from the monitor that I'm looking into, this is all brand new to me. So I didn't come here to deceive anyone, and I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't even try to insult your intelligence to come here and try to lie. I just may not have a clear recollection of everything, but I do know that I'm guilty of what I've been found guilty of, and a crystal clear confession from me of that on both cases. I'm not detracting away from any of that. I just may not recall the details, but I'm guilty of my crime, and I regret what I've done. And I acknowledge that I was out on OR when I committed my crime, and that was in jail. For he's absolutely right. I was, as he began to speak, I was in jail, and I did get released, and I did commit another crime, which enhanced my sentence by way of being released with the same victim. I acknowledge all that. He had it spot on, And it's been a long time, and so like I said, I apologize, and I don't want to be circuitous in my speech. So. But I have acquired a lot of skill sets, because my main focus has been trying to learn as many trades as I can, so that when I'm finally reintroduced in society, I've got something to fall back on. I've tried to preserve my physical frame as well as my mindset. The tickets that I've received in DOC, I did a 10.5-year window with maybe one infraction, and then I did another 17-year window beyond that with two infractions. And the other tickets, if you look at the dispositions on them, a lot of them are dismissed. There isn't that many to really look at. When you look at a weapons charge in there, it was weapons-grade material.
Okay.
In the form
Mr.
of,
Velasco, Mr. Velasco, if you could wrap it up, please.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. They have one that says a riot. And that you
Mr. Velasco, we're not going to discuss those.
I thought you wanted to hear about those things.
Well, I asked you to sum up.
Okay, I don't know what else to do other than to clarify that when you receive infractions, sometimes there's more than one category. I just didn't cook some food in the kitchen. There's something called a work stoppage, but it can also be listed as /riot. So they just wrote down riot instead of work stoppage. I didn't cook Spanish rice because the drains were flooded, and they put me in CDU for that, and the detention. But I just didn't feel unsanitary. But that's, if you look at the things that I have done, hopefully you'll, I have no intentions on recommitting any types of crimes. I mean, I've only had one fight, and that was only after I was struck for beating the guy in basketball. I won a basketball game, got punched in the face.
Okay.
I haven't even had any fights in prison.
All right, Mr. Velasco. Thank you for your statement. Now, Mr. Velasco, the board is going to go into discussion. We do our discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. We've not discussed your case before right this minute. So we just ask that you stay on the phone, remain silent, and we'll be back with you shortly with the decision, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. The board is now in discussion. Mr. Velasco seems like a very smart guy, and has completed a lot of programming, and I think he's very wise to pursue programming in trades so that he'll have options when he's ultimately released. However, I am just having a hard time today with the veracity of his remarks compared with the official record, and I just am not seeing him as a good candidate. I could not support that at this time. But I would like to hear from other board members as well. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. I would be very open. I'm not comfortable with Mr. Velasco's accounting of the incident offense, nor his report of the Department of Corrections, this board, or authority in general. I believe, again, we don't represent that part of the criminal justice system, but the courts have already been lenient with his sentence, which has, at this point, an unreleased credit date of 2021. He'll be 50 years old when he's returned to the community, and I am not supportive of returning them any sooner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Any other comments, Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, I just want to say I agree. I think based on the information that we have in the report and his activity that he's currently incarcerated, I think those two female correction officers have every right to be intimidated by him and what he does. I do just want to put on the record that we do have in file that he did appear before the board. There is a proclamation of parole to consecutive sentence dated October 16th of 2000, which he was referred to, and this document only states that he received a 31-412-B, which is parole to his next consecutive sentence. Now, he may have had a hearing. The other documentation that he was showing is where he had a hearing for a 31-412-B or an absolute discharge. He wasn't granted an absolute discharge. He was granted a 412-B, and then he had one other hearing on April 24th of 1995 for disproportionate review hearing results, and this document states that it was a decision of the board to take the following action, not to recommend commutation to the governor. So those are the two documents, and he, you know, may have came before the board in 2000 for an absolute discharge or parole to the next consecutive sentence, which is standard, and he was just given parole to his next consecutive sentence. So there's no documentation that he actually received an absolute discharge. And I think the documentation he was trying to show us was the one where it says that he came up for parole for absolute discharge or parole to his next consecutive.
The notice of hearing.
Right, the notice, right. Yes.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And any comments, Mr. Neal?
Yes. I'm very uncomfortable with his tendency to be very argumentative.
Yes.
When you say something that you don't agree with, it's not just a matter of correction, it's a matter of argumentative. And the worrisome part about that is that if he was back in the community and this argumentative nature starts flaring up, I'm not comfortable with the idea that he might not commit another crime because he argued with the other person.
Well, thank you, fellow board members. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion will be that we deny 412 A, 411, and home arrest, and that we ask for a one-year set-off based on the year of the crime.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, seconded Mr. Quinones. Agreed, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Neal. Release type denied, 412A, 411, and home arrest. And the reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, I'm going to say serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, victim harassment, definitely, because of coming back the second time. Recent disciplinary infractions, because he has 2017 and 2018 disciplinary. Poor or no release plan, and no family or community support system evident. He talks about his mother, but there's no letter or no participation from his mother. And that will be the reasons. Mr. Velasco, the board has denied your request for your parole, general parole, and home arrest and absolute discharge. And you heard the reasons for denial, sir. Did you have any questions? Did you hear the reasons?
Yeah,
And Mr. Velasco, you'll be certified by the Department of Corrections in approximately 1 year for Mr. Velasco. The board has voted, sir.
Yeah, no, I got you. I was just putting this up really, really close with the one to the left.
And I can see that, sir, but it's not relevant to what we're doing right in hand. It's not relevant.
I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to...
Thank you, sir.
...viewed as argumentative.
Thank you, sir.
Have a nice day.
All right, thank you. Give the phone back to your CO3, please, and this will conclude your hearing. Thank you.